Hello, listeners. This is Cody Starkin, and welcome to another episode of Standing Post. Thank you for your patience, as Standing Post had to take a small break in April to prepare for May's show. Now, we introduce to you a member of the Secret Service Uniform Division for more than 22 years and is a third-generation police officer. He has worked at the various locations such as the White House, the Vice President's Residence, K-9, and the Foreign Missions Branch. He has also participated in the presidential inauguration since 1997, has also participated in the United Nations General Assembly and NATO summits. Please welcome Lieutenant Stephen Stoschek. Welcome to the show, Lieutenant Stephen Stoschek. As I do with any of my guests here on the show, I'd like you to introduce yourself and kind of give a little background about what you do for the organization.
All right. Well, hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me here today. Basically, I'm a lieutenant with the Uniform Division. I'm currently assigned to the Foreign Missions Branch. I have 22 years on the job. I worked at the White House. I worked at the Foreign Missions Branch, which, again, is our patrol division. I worked at the VP's residence. And I also, for the last 6.5 years, I was in charge one of the lieutenants for K-9.
Well, that's fantastic. And I'm happy to have you on the show. You're the second uniform division officer that we had on the show. We previously had Jay Castro and his K-9 partner, Stand Willie, on the show. Before we get into that, I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about your life. Who was Mr. Stoschek when he was growing up? What was life as a kid?
Well, I'm from Queens, New York. I say Northern Alabama, but nobody believes me with my accent. But I'm from Queens, New York. I'm the third generation police officer in my family. My father and both my grandfathers were all New York City police officers. For the people for the people listening to this, if they're familiar with New York, my father worked in the 40th precinct in the South Bronx. Grandfather on my dad's side worked in the 48th precinct in the South Bronx. And then my grandfather on my mother's side worked in the 67 precinct, which is in Brooklyn North and Flatbush.
So growing up, was your grandfather and father kind of, when you were growing up, was something where they're just kind of like, was it always in the culture? Was it something they let you decide to do if you wanted to go into law enforcement?
Well, I tell you, you know, from being around it, being, you know, both sides of my family, it was kind of came natural. They promoted it. They never pushed it on me, but it was something I've always been impressed with it since I'm a, you know, small child. A lot of times growing up, you know, my father would take me out of school, you know, back in the days before, you know, direct deposit to go pick up his check. And when you could actually walk into a school and get your kids without having a whole big production, I'd be in school, you know, on payday. And sometimes my dad would come in, take me out of class, take me over to the precinct to go pick up his check. And I'd be around, hanging around the precinct, seeing all the cops coming in and out. And, you know, I was always impressed by it. Besides my grandfathers and my father, I was always impressed of being around it. You know, a lot of kids growing up, you know, they always wanted to be, you know, I want to be a famous athlete, or I want to be a movie star or something like that. Me, I was always impressed by my father and my grandfathers, and I wanted to be like them. So becoming a police officer to me was kind of really natural. Like, I didn't have to really be pushed at it. It's something I wanted to do since I'm a small child.
What was your favorite memories of the Bronx?
The best thing was actually, and again, the New Yorkers and anybody that knows White Castle hamburgers, right? what we would do is I would go with my father to pick up his check. We'd go to the precinct, hang out with the guys. You know, I'd be running around the precinct, or sometimes the guys would put me in the car with them when we'd drive around as a little kid in the Bronx, right? But after we would go pick up my dad's check, we would go to White Castle, right? And back in the days before they had cup holders in the cars and everything, right? So we would get our food, and then we would park on the side, and then we would open up the glove box where it had the two little, like,
oh, nice.
It wasn't really nothing to put your drinks on, but you would put it like that. And we would sit in the car, and we'd have the food on the dashboard, and we would sit there and eat. So it was like that. We would like spend the day. But it sounds, you know, pretty basic, but it was actually a lot of fun. It was a lot of quality time, too. I enjoyed it a lot.
Forgive me if I'm wrong with this. You started your career in New York?
No. It really initially wasn't in the cards for me to be in the Secret Service in UD. I didn't even know there was a uniform division prior to that. I was all set to be a New York City police officer. You know, that's what I was going to – I took the test, and I went through the process. While I was waiting for the classes and everything to start, because sometimes, unlike, you know, the federal government, sometimes cities don't have money. They say a class starts in January, but they push it back to another time. You know, usually on the federal law enforcement, when they say a class is going in, it pretty much is going in. But I was in the process for the NYPD. I wanted to work in the South Bronx, like where my father worked. I wanted to work in a high crime precinct because that's where you learn the job. So what happened was one of the police officers that worked with my father, his son was a sergeant here on the uniform division. So one day I was at the precinct visiting my dad. Joe came and goes, hey, he goes, you know, because I know you're waiting on the city, but, you know, the uniform division is testing, you know, and his son is on the job. He's doing real well. He's down here in Washington. And it's, you know, the uniform division, you have the White House, you have the vice president's house, but they have this foreign missions branch, which is a patrol division. You know, they ride around in mock cars. They do some patrol work. So, you know, I said, okay, you know, I found out, took the test. It was really just did everything shy of just making like a little drawing on the test. I just walked in. Okay. It was just like an afterthought. I took the test. I did well on it. I went through all the process. I was hired in 10 months. I was, you know, 21 years old, living at home. And next thing you know, hey, I get this letter, report to Beltsville, Maryland next month, which is actually April 14th coming up, is my 22nd anniversary on the job.
Congratulations.
Yep. Officially. Yep.
Can you talk about that, the first impressions when you first came into your training?
Sure. The first impression of the training was I noticed how the nice, you know, again, being from a police family and being aware of like police equipment and different things like that, I was impressed with the academy and how what like nice equipment and stuff that they had. And then it was structured and set up really nicely. Like, and a lot of even nowadays that I talk to other police officers around the country that go to the Secret Service Academy for various training and stuff, they're always impressed with the resources that we have in this agency.
What type of law enforcement agencies do you see come through the academy?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, both state, you know, both local, state, and federal, and also international. You know, I have various international agencies come in for training as well. Our academy and our reputation, we know, is world renowned and we're respected. So, I mean, a lot of agencies look up to us and our expertise on stuff.
Is there any history classes when you're going through the academy about the uniform division?
Sure. Well, they talk about how the uniform division started. You know, it was the White House police initially, you know, took officers from like Metropolitan Police and Park Police, and they created the White House police. And for a good number of years, it was the White House police up until about the 70s when they had to expand the uniform division's role to include protecting the embassies here in the district. What had happened, there was I believe it was the Italian ambassador years ago. He, with the high crime rate in D.C., an Italian ambassador was mugged. And basically, they were asking for more protection through the State Department. So at that time, President Nixon signed, I guess, an executive order expanding our role, basically saying, hey, we're gonna give you the same protection that I have, thus creating a foreign missions branch, our patrol division, okay, to patrol the areas around the embassies and curtail crime around those areas, because the city police, especially at the fiscal situation in the country at the time, a lot of the local police departments could not be tasked with any additional work because everything was very turbulent. You had the Vietnam War going on, you had a lot of riots going on, so the regular city police departments could not sustain taking on new responsibilities, thus created us to serve the diplomatic community. But with that also, that's where the uniform division also, that's where we got our niche in doing regular street police work. The uniform division, a lot of people don't realize that we wear many hats. Yes, we do protection around the White House. Yes, we have post standing and we have access control, but we are a fully functional police department that fully enforces not only federal code, but local district code to include vehicular and traffic law, i.e. pulling someone over for going through a red light, making a traffic stop and issuing a red light ticket. A lot of people don't realize when you hear Secret Service Uniform Division, that that is part of our everyday functions and that we make arrests for various local offenses as well.
Well, that was one of the things I found interesting when I first came into the area is about the jurisdictions and who holds what over certain areas of D.C. And I think maybe the listeners don't know specifically about it, but the one I'm speaking of is the White House, Pennsylvania Avenue, and then I believe it's Lafayette Park. Mm-hmm. Would you mind explaining kind of those jurisdictions?
Sure. Well, a lot of overall, in the scheme of things, the jurisdiction is concurrent because we're all fully sworn police officers, all with the same goal of doing one job of curtailing crime and serving the public. Primarily, like as far as the areas around the White House, you got to remember the White House sits on not only Secret Service mandated responsibility area, but you also have it's a national park. So now you have park police involved. Mm-hmm. Then you're in the District of Columbia. So you have the Metropolitan Police involved. So a lot of times it's kind of funny if something happens on the sidewalk, you know, primarily. Now, if something, whatever whatever goes on, especially if there's an emergency, hey, it's, whoever gets there, and we you know, mitigate the problem. But, you know, a lot of times if you have like the protests in front of the White House, a lot of times it's handled by the park police. They're being escorted by a big group. You're going to have D.C. Police SOD, the Special Operations Division, escorting that large group. So technically specific areas sometimes, again, it's all one team. You know, today in this area, your UD may have an arrest in this area, then tomorrow it's park police. It's kind of like whoever gets cuffs on them first.
I hear that often where individuals say, well, I didn't know there was a uniform division. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that existed in the Secret Service. What type of protections in law enforcement do you offer through the uniform division?
Sure. Well, a lot, you know, the uniform division has a lot of the same resources that a regular police department has. We have, you know, all our specialized units. If you want to go into emergency response team, our ERT team, you can go into that, which is like the SWAT team. The counter sniper team, you have canine, you have crime scene unit, you have the motor unit. You know, you also have the magnetometer unit. As you know, when the president travels, the uniform division provides all the magnetometer support to screen everybody going into an event or an arena. You also have that where guys are on the road, whatever the president travels, the uniform division is part of that security package. So, you know, you have that available to you, too, for the people that like to travel.
With all that being said, and I know you had mentioned that a lot of characteristics are the same as other law enforcement agencies, but what makes the uniform division unique?
What makes the uniform division unique is that you are trusted and empowered to stand next to the president of the United States of America, the leader of the free world, with a loaded firearm and have a key to the White House. And sometimes in our everyday functions and responsibilities, I mean, even all of us sitting right here in this room, that we're in just being in this building and things we're accessed to, it's a very powerful responsibility. And sometimes the younger generation on the job, and I'm not, you know, saying this in a bad way, but, you know, sometimes you forget. Like, I came on the job at 21 years old. I've been on this job my entire adult life. And sometimes you realize, like, wow, you know, looking through the years, you know, I've served now under four presidents, and I was a 21-year-old officer when I first assigned to the White House, and I was literally standing next to the President of the United States with a loaded firearm. I mean, that they don't just give that to anybody. So that's what separates us from any other law enforcement agency. It's an awesome responsibility, being responsible to protect the continuity of government.
And you just mentioned that. I'm guessing, was that your when you realized the moment that you got what you got yourself into, where you had the loaded weapon and you're kind of just standing there the next to the president, you had that responsibility?
You realize it in the academy. Like, actually, you know, for any police officer to get, when you get, at first, you're always happy to get the job, doing the feel that you want to do. You're realizing, hey, you're going to have health insurance, you're going to have a pension. Like, for me, you know, getting on the job real young, I'll be retired young. You know, I have a little bit under 3 years left to go, you know, give or take, right? But it hits you when you get sworn in, when you graduate the academy and you raise your right hand. And again, being from a police family, that was one of the happiest days that I could recall, getting sworn in, being on the job, not only because of my family background, but that I'm stepping forward. Anybody steps forward, raises their right hand to be a first responder, it is a special thing. And you have to remind, the job is always to remind people around you, you know, like being a supervisor, the younger officers on the job, to just step back and say, hey, you know, this isn't an everyday job that we do.
Did your family come down to see you graduate?
Absolutely. At that time, we walked up. Well, I got, when I made sergeant and lieutenant, my father pinned my shield on me. They acknowledged the fact that he was a New York City police officer. So it made me feel good that they acknowledged him being there and that he got to pin my shield on me. It was very special. So I that was one thing that sticks with me. And my dad, you know, he just passed away. And so, you know, having the memories of that is important to me.
So being this newly shielded 21-year-old, where were your first assignments and where did this job take you after those assignments?
I was at the White House. Got to work all the posts at the White House, you know, foot beats and some of our patrol cars that we have there as well. Yeah, you know, I was worked there. I traveled. And then about 3 years into it, I got transferred out to patrol, out to the Foreign Missions Branch. And that's where I've always wanted to be initially. I always wanted my job when I came on this job was Foreign Missions, was patrol. I like being out in a patrol car. I like traffic stops, making arrests. And okay. I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to do that,
right?
You know, and be out there. And I spent a good amount of time at Foreign Missions Branch. So I got to gain the police, the street police experience to eventually become a sergeant. I was successful there, and lieutenant, same thing. So it, having that street knowledge does very well for you on this job.
Do you have any particular stories on the Foreign Mission Branch?
I tell you, there are so many. I mean, you're out there on patrol. There are so many things that you see. Again, just like a regular police officer, you deal with a theft, or you flag down for an assault, or you deal with a mental health consumer that needs, you know, assistance. You know, mental health consumers around that, homeless, that have issues, that they get involved. Situations that require police enforcement, being out in the street, maybe they're heckling people or giving them a hard time, and you know, we're brought into that and have to take action. A lot of times too, we respond to, if there's an accident, if a diplomat gets involved in an accident here in the city police don't take the report. The uniform division responds and takes a regular accident report as they would, as the regular city police would.
Yeah, and I think that's important because, I mean, again, going back to the conversation about realizing about the uniform division and understanding that they are part of the Secret Service and they have a very important mission. One of those realizations is when you're actually going through the embassy area and you're just walking around, you see a patrol car that just says United States Secret Service. Yeah. And it just takes you out of that moment. You're like, oh, wait, okay, now I understand the, you know, the mm-hmm. scope of the responsibilities. And that was a lot of my friends that have come into the area and mm-hmm. see that. And they're just like, oh, you know, I didn't realize that was a thing. That's one thing that I, you know, I think is important to share with everybody, at least sure. With the listeners, is that your jurisdiction does go out that far as the scale of importance and what you do for the organization. You didn't always spend your time in the Foreign Missions Branch. I also heard that you had some time with the K-9 division.
Yes. Yes, I spent about 6.5 years in K-9 as the lieutenant in K-9. K-9 is a living, and everybody listening to this that's familiar with K-9 knows that is a living, breathing machine. Because you're dealing with a huge vehicle fleet. You're dealing with a huge, you know, you're dealing with animals.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about the canines. So.
No, I'll get to that. No, I'm getting to that. You're dealing with, you know, you got vehicles that need maintenance and so forth. You have canines that these dogs are traveling all over the area, all over the country, all over the world. So you have the canines, and it, just like people, canines can get sick. They got to go to the vet. They need their shots. They need, you know, food. You know, it's canine, unlike the other teams. All right, you know, ERT, you got your rifle. CS, you got your rifle. Canine, you have a living, breathing partner. So working in that unit and supervising that unit, you have a handful of cops you got to deal with, right? And different individuals with different needs and different situations. Then you have dogs and you have cars. So everything in K-9 is times three. Mm. And then add, you know, the administrative and operational stuff to that as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Every day my phone constantly rang, and, you know, as well as my lieutenant counterpart in there, as well as the captain. We had our hands full in there, but we kept the ship running. And it was something that I was very proud to be in because, you know, a lot of police officers go throughout their career having never been in a specialized unit. So to serve in that unit in any capacity, like, you know, now example, now being a lieutenant, I never had a dog. Only the officers and the sergeants get an operational dog. If I had a dog, it would be in meetings all the time. There would be no point in giving a lieutenant a dog. But as far as to serve in that unit, not many people got an opportunity to be in a specialized unit. So anybody that goes in their career to serve in a specialized unit, it really is something to be proud of.
Did you ever work with Jay Castro?
Yes.
Okay.
And I supervised Jay. You listening, Jay? You did a good job on that last podcast too. Yes, I worked with Jay.
I think that's maybe something that we can talk about now is the responsibilities, because we got the perspective through Jay with his partner about what he had to do on a day-to-day basis. But as from a supervisor's standpoint, as a lieutenant, can you explain some of your duties and responsibilities for the organization?
A lieutenant on the uniform division, just like any lieutenant in any police department, times you are the watch commander, you are in charge of a shift, you are in charge of operationally, you are in charge of the officers and sergeants underneath you. And everything that goes on that shift, whether it's an access control, physical security standpoint, or as a police patrol standpoint, you are responsible to answer for everything and know what's going on in that shift. Like, for example, I work out patrol at the Foreign Missions Branch. When I'm serving on the weekend as the watch commander, when there's arrests going on, when units are making stops in the street, anything happens, anybody gets hurt, I got to not only make sure that paperwork is done correctly, situations are mitigated or handled correctly. I also have to be prepared to know on the spot to brief a captain or the on-call inspector or ultimately the chief, brief him or her on that situation to make sure that the director and anybody else who needs to be notified has correct information as such.
I mean, those are the formal responsibilities as a lieutenant in the uniform division, but there's also kind of a leadership aspect of it. And so does the uniform division kind of have a formal or informal leadership coaching or counseling or anything of that nature?
When you get promoted, they have like the first line supervisor schools that they go to. And there's various in-service trainings out at RTC that you go to. But a lot of it goes too with length, you know, time on the job. Being on the job this long, you know, for the most part, the scenarios that you pretty much, you get to a point in your career where you've dealt with, you've seen it all, or you know, if you see a scenario handled, like, all right, you know how it's going to go. What makes our job too unique is that even though you're getting involved in a lot of stuff, we really don't have the volume of work the regular police force. My father, working in the South Bronx, he handled 200 to 250 calls a month, you know, calls for service. UD, Park Police, Capitol Police, we don't get that volume. I mean, we're out there doing it, but we don't get radio run after radio run. And that's why a lot of times, too, I remind young officers that, you know, a lot of times being on a foot beat or being in a booth doing physical security, you know, sometimes it does get monotonous, but you have to remind the men and women that the job they're doing is very important. You know, a lot of agencies like ours, again, and I use UD, Park Police and Capitol as an example, because we have a specialized, you know, mission and function. But that doesn't make it a B team. For the people out there listening from New York, I use the Port Authority Police of New York and New Jersey. Port Authority Police is a great paying job, but they've always looked at the NYPD like, hey, they're the main city police. So like, so you're from Chicago, you're the main, Chicago's the main city police. So a lot of those departments look up to the city, like, hey, that's the main police department. But you know, any police officer serving, no matter where they are, you're in danger, and it doesn't make you a B team, you know. And again, Port Authority Police on 9/11 lost 37 police officers protecting a building, World Trade Center, you know. And they always said, "Hey, we may make more money, but you know, NYPD's flying around in the cars with the lights on and everything." But hey, they lost 37 police officers that day protecting a building.
Wow.
The same thing the guys are doing down the men and women are doing down the street. So sometimes when you're sitting on post, that post is there for a reason, and the access control is very important for the safety of everybody. So sometimes when you get bored or you might get a little, you know, monotonous, think about what you're protecting, where you are, and how important it is not only to the continuity of government and our protectees, but the country. And when you put it in those terms, you kind of realize like, hey, this is important. And, you know, so when you kind of slip away, thinking like, you know, oh, I'm bored or whatever, you kind of jolt you back into reality that your job is important and that you're a police officer.
Lieutenant Stoshnik, what would you tell your younger self when he was considering joining the uniform division and maybe your first couple of years within the organization?
Honestly, and I could, I'm answering this honestly, I wouldn't change like my career path, what I've done so far. What I would tell, you know, I was always like a special case having family on the job. So I was always like I've always been an old soul. So coming on the job, I was kind of familiar with, you know, when they come into class and they start telling you about health insurance and health benefits, you know, half the people were like sleeping. I paid attention. When they were talking to you about your TSP with the, you know, putting money in your TSP, I paid attention in the retirement and stuff like that. Everybody said, hey, kid, before you know it, you know, and my father said, he goes, hey, before you know it, you know, you're going to be approaching retirement. You know, a lot of people are like, yeah, whatever. You know, I got like 100 years left on the job. I'm never going to retire. But it, you know, I got to tell you, I went to bed 21 years old and I woke up 43. I don't know where the time went in the whole middle, because of all the times being working on my birthday, you know, canceled days off or, you know, freezing, you know, out in the, it just goes by so fast. And then just one day goes into another, you know, you're here working at the White House, you're doing a 12-hour shift. You go out in the street, you're making arrests, you go to court the next day, one day goes into another on the job. If you work midnights, you know, you make an arrest during the midnight shift. You get off in the morning. You got to go to court. You're in court till about, you know, noon, 1 o'clock, if you're lucky. Then you got to turn around, go back in at 10 o'clock that night. So it's like one day just goes into another. Next thing you know, it's like 5 years later. time I spent, and you talk about time, the time I spent in canine was like literally a blink of an eye. I couldn't believe how fast that time went, and I was there for a while. So it's unbelievable how fast time goes in general, especially as you keep getting older on the job.
If somebody is considering now, today, to join the Uniform Division, what type of message would you give them?
Uniform Division is a great job. You get to do things that and see things that a lot of people don't get to see, to travel. You know, everything, every time you see something on the news, we're living it. Every time you see something on the news, it turns into, okay, well, that's going to be a 12-hour shift, you know.
Right.
You know, because of the nature of our job and you know, everything has to be protected at all costs. First responders have to go into work. When there's 9 feet of snow, I live in a cul-de-sac and my street is the very last to get, you know, plowed. But you know what? I've had to push the car. I had neighbors pushing the car, getting me up the hill to get me out of the cul-de-sac to get me to work. You know, there's no option for first responders to stay home because people, are, you know, our fellow officers, our protectees, the country is depending on us that we have to go to work. So it's an awesome responsibility. And with that, that's why, you know, a lot of people don't understand in the private sector. They're like, hey, you know, police officers do 20 years and they retire. They do 25 years and they retire. Well, it's not an easy 20, 25 years. You're working shift work. You're missing family functions. It's a toll on your body. You're out there in all types of weather. You're out there sometime. You're out there on patrol and you're rolling around with some 20-year-old trying to arrest somebody and you're 50 years old. You know, so it's a job that takes a toll on your body. Just the shift work alone takes a toll on your body. So that's why, you know, you have 20-year retirements and 25-year retirements and because it takes a beating on you.
Well, and that's one thing I wanted to bring up is Police Week, which I believe starts on May 6th. And it's a host of events. And it's kind of a misnomer because it isn't a week. It's about a week or two of events that are taking place that various different law enforcement organizations put on. Do you have any experiences attending any of those events? What do you have to say about like the Police Week and what goes on?
Police Week is very special. I've been attending Police Week my entire time on the job. Police Week, every year Police Week is to honor the police officers that not only have fallen in the line of duty that year, but have fallen in the line of duty in the entire history, that they're never forgotten. So they have the candlelight vigil where we go to the law enforcement memorial. Everybody puts on our dress uniforms and they read not only every name on the wall, but they read the names that are going to be put on the wall. And what they do is they start with lighting one candle, and by the time it's all done, all the candles are lit, and you could hear a pin drop there at that vigil. It's done to, you know, that once a year that we all come together across the country, and not only is it across the country, it's actually becoming international because we have every year the London Bobbies come over. I see them every year. The Mounties come down from Canada. The cops from Australia come. We've had you know, officers from the Middle East come. You know, from all over Europe, the Polizei from Germany, all these guys come over and you know, no other country has that. You know, you talk to the Bobbies over in Britain, they don't do any type of memorials like that. It's not big. It's a big here. They all like coming here. In fact, the London police copied how we have the blue line American flag with the blue line in it. They have the Union Jack with the blue line in it. And sometimes even on TV, if you see the London cops on television, you'll see some of them have them on their vests. And they got that from over here at Police Week.
Oh, nice.
So it's become a big thing. Police Week is very special to honor our own. Again, you know, police officers are out there every day, you know, stepping forward, putting their lives on the line to keep us safe. We wouldn't have the quality of lives in our communities that we have without the police and the wonderful job that, you know, is done all over the country.
Can you speak to the brother and sisterhood of law enforcement officers, like what that means to you and what you feel that it might mean to the organization as a whole?
It's very important to me personally. Having been on this job for 22 years, we've seen stuff out in the street, Uniform Division, we've experienced a lot of, you know, stuff on the job. You know, having gone to police funerals in the last 22 years. And actually, for me, I've been going even before that because I would go as a young kid from New York City police officers. You know, my father in his career went over, you know, 150 police funerals. Now, you know, NYPD has 40,000 cops, but still, you know, one funeral is too much. It hits you when, you know, you look to the left of you, you look to the right of you, and there's men and women wearing the same uniform that you're wearing. especially besides that bond of being on the job, you know, I could tell you, I mean, there's people on this job that, you know, we all kind of grew up together. And now we're the generation that's getting ready to retire. I mean, I'm a lieutenant. There's friends that I came on the job with that they're lieutenants, captains, inspectors, sergeants, and we all know each other for years. And, you know, you start taking out your photo album and you see pictures of guys and girls, you were all young kids. Not only is it professional bond, but it's also a personal bond. In a family, a bond of family. You know, they always say, you know, you always see, like, you know, they say service family and everything. The job really is a family. Because I can tell you, you know, you guys have all been here. You know, I've seen anytime something bad has ever happened on this job, the agency has always stepped up and helped that family or that individual. I mean, tenfold.
I think something that we do unique for the Secret Service is that we have our Wall of Honor, and something that we do during Police Week is to commemorate those individuals that have fallen in the line of duty. Have you attended that event? Can you explain that to the listeners?
Absolutely. And as far as the not only the Secret Service, but for the Uniform Division personally, Officer Leslie Kohlfeldt, in 1950, he stopped the assassination of President Truman at the Blair House. And even though he was mortally wounded, he was able to still get a shot off killing the perpetrator. So the Secret Service and also the Uniform Division, we've all paid the price of directly protecting the president and all of our protectees to make sure that the continuity of government was preserved.
I'm a 21-year-old looking into the law enforcement career field, and I finally decided on the Secret Service. And I know there's two paths there. Well, technically three. You have the agents, you have the UD officers, and then you have the APTs. And we've talked about that on the show a couple of times about what the separation is. But I want to go more into law enforcement and the law enforcement career path. And we have the agent and we have the uniform division. What separates the two? Why would I want to go uniform division?
All right. Well, it depends. It's the same agency, but it's two different types of law enforcement. For the best way to explain it to the listeners, the special agents are your detectives, your criminal investigators. The uniform division is your uniform police force. If you want to be a criminal investigator, you know, they do the counterfeit cases, threats against the president, a lot of, you know, 18 USC code, you know, crimes, then special agent would be your path. If you like the more traditional aspect of being in uniform, got the physical security, law enforcement side of the uniform division. Again, the uniform division is structured just like a traditional police department. We have our four-star, you know, chief, our chief of department, you know, all the way down to officer, you know, the full rank structure like any PD. And we also have the full setup like any police department. We have our specialized units. We have our patrol division, our foreign missions branch. And then, you know, if you have the physical security and access control part of the awesome responsibility of protecting the White House, the Vice President's residence, and the continuity of government.
And so what does the pay and benefits look like for someone that would want to go into the uniform division?
Pay and benefits for the uniform division, you know, it's really good. You know, and in fact, I got to tell you, I attended the retirement seminar, you know, not too long ago for the job. And the FERS law enforcement retirement, you know, a lot of places, you know, we retire, we get a pension, we get our thrift savings, we get our health benefits. These are huge things. And to collect a pension like myself, I'll be retired from this job with 25 years on. I'll be 46 years old and I will have my pension, you know, and I'll have my health insurance. You know, a lot of places, the private sector and even some police departments, you don't get that opportunity. For example, a lot of the police departments in Virginia, you may retire with a higher percentage of your pension, but you don't take your health insurance into retirement. You have to pay out of pocket once you retire.
Okay.
So having the retirement that we have, you know, it's huge. And it's something that should be not taken for granted and appreciated. Because if you look around and if you really do your research on, you know, other law enforcement agencies, on benefits and things of that nature, we do have a good plan.
What are some of the qualities and traits, experiences you want somebody to have when they're coming into this organization? Or what kind of prior education would you want to see or experiences?
The biggest thing, me personally, is common sense. Is common sense. And you know what? Education is very important. But you need to be a police officer. You got to have kind of like a bouncer mentality in yourself too. You got to be able to, you know, you be professional, but you got to be able to go. The public, our protectees, the staff, you know, they're going to look to you to mitigate a problem, and you can't be meek about it. You have to, if you have to get up in somebody's face to mitigate a problem and protect others, you have to be able to do that. And you have to be, even if there have been times on the street, you know, or anybody, any police officer will tell you, you're in an enforcement situation with somebody and that person's like four times your size. You know, you can't, you be professional and you do your job, but you can't be afraid. Like, this guy just stabbed somebody and now you have to go get him. Sometimes you don't always have backup with you. You have to be prepared to mitigate a problem. And if you're not built that way, it's not the job for you, because you're going to get yourself hurt. You're going to get the public hurt, your fellow officers hurt. You have to be able to, not to use slang, but be a scrapper a little bit. You got to be able to scrap. But I think with the job, the best thing is form a military, form a police officers. A lot of police officers that come from regular departments that have come on this job, they not only appreciate the benefits, but they also appreciate that the pace is a little bit slower. Not that it's to be taken lightly because the pace is a little slower, but they appreciate it because they've worked a lot harder for less money. Okay. You know, not that we don't work hard here. So you can kind of take a breather. You know, sometimes you got, again, officers in regular departments, they'll tell you, Chicago, right, New York, call to call to call constantly. It just doesn't stop. You know, and you know, say you're holding 100 jobs, you handle one. No, you think it's 99. No, there's two more that just came and you're back to 104, you know, 103. Yeah. Forgive my math.
Lieutenant Stashek, it was great to have you on the show. We're very happy to have you in here, especially to kind of give your perspective in the history of the Uniform Division and your experiences throughout your career here. I was wondering if you might be able to give some wisdom for those that are in the Uniform Division today.
Keep your head up, you know, take care of one another. Remember that the job that we do is extremely important. It's important for our protectees. It's important for the staff that we protect as well, the general public. And again, for the country, you know, if we fail, it jeopardizes the continuity of government. I can't stress the importance of the continuity of government. We have to make sure, we have to be the line between order and chaos and make sure everything is straight.
And do you have any final words for the listeners?
Final words for the listeners is, hey, you know, anybody you know that wants to be a police officer, it is a noble profession. Is it a great profession? If you know that, you know, anybody who shows interest in being a police officer, commend them and encourage them. And a lot of times in the news, there's a lot of anti-police media, but just take a stop for a minute and think about what police officers do and think about what they do for strangers, and that they are willing to lay down their lives for their fellow Americans and people they don't know, and risk not going home to their families to make sure that you are safe in your home at night. So just something to think about, and say thank you when you see them.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Standing Post. For more information about the U.S. Secret Service, please visit us at www.secretservice.gov. Till next time, listeners, stay vigilant.